Welcome to Mediocre Movies, where we're on a quest for the most okay movie of all time, the perfect bland taste.
The mineral water of movies.
The mineral, tap waters. Oh, tap water's alright.
I like tap water.
Tap water's fine.
Tap water would probably be...
But you're not moved by it.
No. No
one's
like,
your life.
Yes, tap water's here.
Yeah. Yes, my favourite at the birthday party.
Unless you're in like an ad for Mount Franklin or something.
Yeah.
Which in that case, you lose it over tap water.
No, you hate tap water.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, true.
Why, they wouldn't be
you
selling
don't want
you
people
tap,
drinking
water.
Tap water.
They sell tap water in bottles. And that's another issue.
And so for those of you who don't know, we're looking at movies that were rated between
35 and 65 on Rotten
Tomatoes. And we're trying to find a unanimous agreement on the most okay film of all
time. A film that did not move us at all in any way, shape, or form.
And to be the most okay film, it has to be rated 5, right?
We have to rate it
5. Yeah, we need to give a unanimous decision.
We have to be like, this was
we agree that it's a 5.
This is part 2 of On the Golf Course. Last episode we watched Bag of Vance, I thought that was very okay, but it did not get quite enough from Bradley. He didn't think it was okay, and that's very fair. Keen thought it was a little better. Matt thought it was a little better. That's totally fine. Everyone's wrong, but I'll move on.
I feel really bad because I am going to give this film a better rating.
Oh, I'm going to give it. I don't feel bad. I'm going to give this film a much better rating.
It's a better film. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of people being like, this jerk gave Bag of Vance 4 when, like, this is an Adam Sandler film.
And it doesn't matter. Like, this is a superior golf film. If you haven't listened to our last episode, I would recommend, because I made it.
It lays a little bit of the groundwork for.
There's going to be a little bit of context here, because we're going to poke shit at Bag of Vance because
also you should check it out anyway because we're funny.
It's just
if you haven't seen it, it's probably going to make not much sense, but if you haven't seen it, I don't blame you. It was very forgettable.
Don't waste
if you have
time.
Seen it and it's been 10 years and you've totally forgotten, also very applicable. But yes, let's get into Happy Gilmore. It is directed by Dennis Duggan. Rotten Tomatoes score 60%. Brad, you had something about that?
I was just going to say, Dennis Duggan is, for those who don't know, the director of most of the Happy Madison films. Not all of them, but like a fair chunk of them.
Probably Adam Sandler's childhood friend.
Yeah, probably just... Yeah.
That guy Adam Sandler knew was like, you have to sit in this chair for the movie.
Yeah, so he's the dude making the films. He made like, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Don't Mess with the Zohan. So a few of those later.
The goofy comedies.
The goofball comedies. Screwball comedies.
Very, very okay.
Yeah.
But I think this is one of the better Sandler films, 100%, without any doubt in my mind. I can't think of... The only one I like is Billy Madison.
I think that's the one
I like more than this, but again, personal opinion. And it's not on the golf course, so it's not relevant to this episode.
For example, just to start off with, I think all of you guys had... Have you guys seen Happy Gilmore before?
I have seen Happy Gilmore.
That's what I thought. So I had not seen Happy Gilmore before this. Oh, shit. Where are my manners? Introductions, first of all. Who are we with today?
Yeah. I'm relying on everyone watching the other episode.
Do that right now.
Watch the other episode and you'll know who we are.
I'm Riley.
I'm Brad.
I'm Matt.
And then I'm Keaton. And so, as I was saying... Also, watch the other episode. As I was saying,
Listen with your eyeballs.
I had not seen Happy Gilmore before this. I was apprehensive at best to watch it because I'm not a big fan of the Adam Sandler
goofball comedies.
I feel they're
someone's
really
a bit pretentious.
Labored. Well, I mean, look, they're basically the exact same movie, just with a slightly different plot.
But I love that movie. Core underlying movie is, I am
not.
That hits home.
Majority
of the time they miss.
Yeah, but this one, man, Happy Gilmore, pleasantly surprised. Maybe also because I watched it in succession to Bag of Ants, which left no impact.
I'm going to open with this. This is a superior film. Of golf movies, I know that should probably be our conclusion, but I have to get that off my chest right now. This is a superior golf movie. Of these two, if someone brought to me those two movies, one in each hand, I would pick Happy Gilmore every time.
And you know what? I was pleasantly surprised to. I agree with you on that. Like, I was pleasantly surprised to also think that, man, out of Bag of Vance and Happy Gilmore, Happy Gilmore is actually the superior golf film.
In terms of golf films, if you're going to, like, pick a golf film that gets to go and hang out with Caddyshack, like, wins a competition to go and hang out with Caddyshack.
Yeah, because Caddyshack's god tier.
Happy Gilmore wins by a long shot.
Yeah, I can't think of any other golf film right now, but...
Yeah, what was that? When was me and Keaton were talking during the film, and was saying in Bag of Vance, especially, we're like, oh, it does a poor job of making golf interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Happy Gilmore is seamlessly... The golf is just... It's yeah. just smooth.
The
it's
good thing
like, yeah. it, you can watch it and you're not like, it's oh, flashier. This is entertaining. Yeah, yeah, they do it in a way that is much more engaging.
The good thing about Happy Gilmore is it is as much like a hockey movie, like an ice hockey movie, as it is a golf movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you're a fan, that. If you're a fan of like ice hockey, you'll be like, I love this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so.
In a weird way, because like the whole setup to the thing is like, oh yeah. For the longest time, I wanted to play ice hockey. So if you're like, you know, like you see the flashback of him like playing with his dad and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, here we go.
Here we go. Tears from Brad.
No, and it's like, oh yeah, he's wearing like an Edmonton Oilers jersey, and it's yeah. like, it's just like if you're a golf, if you're an ice hockey fan, you're like,
I love you'll like team. All these right because yeah. he can. The plot of the movie is that he can't skate at all.
Yeah.
So he can't play ice hockey because.
But he's got a wicked.
But he can.
He's got a wicked swing.
He can slap shot it yeah. like a deer. He breaks glass, I think, yeah, yeah. in the first one. He breaks the stadium.
He shatters the glass, yeah.
yeah.
And so, as the movie progresses, he you know translates this amazing swing of his onto grass and not
He doesn't
ice.
Translate it. He does it to make people well, work, and he hits a 400 drive.
Yeah.
And that I thought that was actually one of the very first very funny sequences.
Definitely, because actually, what we've written down here is obviously these notes are taken down in chronological order. And obviously, the first,
Big
not the
laugh.
Introduction, the first sort of humorous part that they try and nail on is the through the intercom where he's trying to get his missus back and whatnot. and we're like, this is good, and then it's not so good, and then it's good,
and then it's
not
great,
so good.
And then it's great again.
And
I
then
think.
When it gets to the house where he's getting the guys to start working, he's driving down the road and whatnot, that's where we're like, this is comedy gold. Like, we've yeah. written it down. Get rid of inconsistency. Comedy gold.
He smashes the window, and they're like, beginner's luck, you can't do it again. And then he swings and hits the guy on the head, and they're like, you hit that guy. And then he
shouldn't have been standing there.
The retort of, he shouldn't have been standing there. The guy was in his own home after a window was smashed. And then the wife, and then he goes, oh, third time's the charm. And then he hits the wife, and the wife falls out of the window and down the roof and into the bush. And they're like, we better go inside. And I just thought, that was brilliant. Also, one of the moving guys was one of the actors from The Three Stooges. The movie that was like...
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it
like the... Really?
Oh, yeah, no. It was a really... It's a famous guy now, but I can't remember his name at all. So, obviously not that famous.
Yeah. Like, from... No fact. Yeah, I'll look it up.
Yeah, he was, like, quite famous. But, like, at that point, I think because it set the tone... Like, that happens three massive coincidences.
Yeah.
But it's funny. That tone is set, like, the ridiculousness
of That was movie. Certainly where I think the movie got a hold. On me, at least. Like, that yeah. scene, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, obviously, the first 10 minutes, like, oh, yeah, it's good.
It sets up everything.
Like,
you can't play hockey.
But when, as soon as that gets in, I'm like, wow. Yeah, I'm invested in this film now. Like, it's
the China, like the Chinese lady joke where he makes out with the thing, and yeah. the lady comes upstairs, and like that was funny, but yeah. I was like, oh, it's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But that joke, I don't think it was as stupid. I think it was just like more slapstick
yeah.
humor, and it's just really well executed.
Yeah.
For that, and then from there he goes to the golfing range, and that's where he meets Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
Oh,
who if you're gonna yeah, if you're gonna have somebody in your movie, Carl Weathers is
the guy
the
to pick.
To have, yeah,
who has one arm extremely longer than the other, and the wooden hand that has all the fingers pointing,
yeah.
but separated. Which every time I looked at, I absolutely
so
lost
good. And then
it.
They do like the wide shots, and like the hands like a meter
around. It's got like an extra elbow in it.
Well, look, so, like, you know, we're looking at, like, a, I guess, a more critical
lens. I know, we're just enjoying...
No, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Dumb jokes. Good dumb jokes.
I mean, and that's the reason to watch Happy Gilmore anyway, right?
Yeah.
If this kind of humour goes completely over your head, or you're just really not a fan whatsoever, then it's probably not the movie for you. But I will say, on the other side, some of the redeeming qualities outside of the humour, if you're not a fan of the humour... it follows like the three act structure fairly closely, and it does it does a pretty good job of that. The plot line was actually better than, again, watch the Bag of Ants episode. But
it's very similar.
It's similar, but also it does it in a. I feel like is it a shorter movie than Bag of Vance?
Yeah, it's a very short movie. Happy
and I
for this day and
it's,
age, at
it's
least.
90. It's
90 minutes,
and I think it's actually perfect for that length.
Yeah, yes. I wrote that down. That was actually a question I was going to ask. Do you think 90 minutes was a good length?
Great length. I thought it was for a comedy,
90 minutes is
perfect.
Pretty much golden.
I think just to talk on it from
go.
I think like comedy movies that kind of go over that, you know, I'm trying to think of like, I know like the Revenge of the Nerds movies are kind of a bit longer. And so you kind of just end up having sequences in there with jokes in there that like,
they're not
that,
part of it.
Just not like, part the jokes of the story.
Just run on too long.
Like absolutely. That. Well, and see, that's the thing, right? That's why I felt like the 90 minutes was a great slot, because it filled every minute that you watched was relevant to the plot and pushed things, well, for the most part, and pushed things forward. You know, they afforded a little bit of leeway to make jokes. It's a comedy movie. Yeah. You know, you expect that. It has to. And
I'd like to retract my statement that Revenge of the Nerds is in fact an hour and a half long. So it just feels like a long movie.
It just feels like a long movie.
Well, that could be a pacing issue.
That's a pacing issue as well. And so I felt like pacing was actually quite good in
this movie. Was really dead on for the pacing, I think.
Also, 69.
I think it maybe might have been like 5 minutes during the middle of the film where it was sort of, it slowed down a bit. And I was like, oh, okay, well, it has to. Like, obviously, it can't be 100 miles per hour like for the entire 90 minutes. But then it picks up again. I'm like,
absolutely. Compared to Bag of Vance, which for me felt just really labored and quite slow. I mean, they're definitely two very different kinds genres of films, and I get that and I understand that, but I felt like as like if we're doing a comparison, which we kind of are, between two golf films, Happy Gilmore just delivers it at a better pace. Like the pace was really spot on.
Well, like Matt Damon's character has an amazing drive, and that's what his advantage over his competition is, that he can hit the ball further than everyone else.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler's advantage in this movie is that he can hit the ball
400 yards
than anyone else. 400 yards. For the exact same,
much further than anyone else.
Yeah.
And so, like, the character's similar in a way. Well, again, they don't want to play golf.
They're both down on their luck, I guess. They're both struggling.
Yeah, like...
Well, exactly. Yeah, you know, and so...
It's just that...
Just again to reiterate, this movie came out before Bag of Vance.
Four years before
Bag of Vance.
Well, there you go.
And then, I mean, Adam Sandler, one of the big differences is he tries to solve every conflict he has, not through diplomatic measures,
through violence. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is just an extension of that slapstick comedy. You know what I mean?
Also, an extension of like hockey.
That is true. Hockey is very true.
Solve a lot of. It's just gloves off. It's part of the game. You're allowed to take your gloves off and fight, and then don't break it. Yep. You don't break it up. And when it's over though.
Yeah.
Do you think it's overdone though? Because like every scene for at least the first 45-50 minutes ended in like,
I tell you what though. Okay,
it allowed for the character development, I think.
I agree. So I was going to say, like, on some level I thought, oh man, does he have to resolve everything with violence? But on the other hand, it's a reflection. It's a real good reflection of Adam Sandler's character. What's his name again?
Happy.
That's right. Oh my god. The titular character. Yeah. Well, you know. Jeez.
Goofed on that one. That's going to be good.
It's a good reflection of Happy's character and persona. I mean, given that he's a hockey player as well.
Yeah. All he wanted to do was play hockey. And like, he literally fights everyone in every scene when he plays hockey. And then he gets off the field and he just starts fighting everyone doing anything else that he doesn't like.
Yeah,
and it was. I thought that was, and then it allowed for the character development of him being like, "I'm not going to punch everybody in the
I've got to be calm and cool. I got to be like, go to my happy place. I got to thing."
Speaking of violence, obviously one of the most famous scenes of the movie is Adam Sandler versus Bob Barker,
which I was just reading. Bob Barker studied martial arts. Under Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That was unreal.
He insisted on doing his own stunts because he knew self-defense.
Could you imagine like Adam Sandler's like, you know who I should fight? It'd be funny if I fought Bob Barker.
Yeah.
He's old. I could beat Bob Barker in a fight. And Bob Barker's like, all right, I'll do it. It just comes in like, all right, let's fight. And just whoops his ass.
It won an award for the best fights
in the MTV award, which
not anything to go by.
Well, it's not anything to go by. It's still won an award for, though.
I pretty much shall put on the fireplace.
For a comedy to win an action sequence, I thought
that's true.
Although MTV.
Although it's MTV.
So you're giving your take.
Because it's a very funny action sequence. Yeah. Because it's Bob Barker, the host of Price is Right, versus Adam Sandler. who plays Adam Sandler everything.
But yeah, it's nice that it's kind of got, like, what I like about the comedy in the movie is it is a little bit over the top,
mm-hmm.
but you're never like, this is an unrealistic portrayal of real life. You're just like, it's kind of like,
he's just a very aggressive man who has issues yeah. and he clearly needs to work
yeah through. It's hyperbolic yeah. like you yeah. can kind of
yeah you
can
kind
it's
of,
realistic yeah. in some level but yeah. you also know that this is a movie
yeah
yeah
and it's okay.
Like, I mean, one person's not going to cause hundreds of seemingly NASCAR fans to show up and cheer him on during yeah. every game, described as the economically diverse crowd, which I thought was, I think the movie makes a good comment on what golf is yes. as well yeah. very quickly and very like, cleverly, and it doesn't focus on it to like make it the main point yeah, of the movie yeah, it's just quickly like it's an economically diverse crowd because now poor people like poor people are here, people trailer well, trash
yeah,
are here
yeah, yeah,
to know, watch a man who fights
yeah, everybody show that in one of the earlier scenes when Happy goes to his first golfing thing and all the golf and their polo shirts are all surrounding
yeah.
Happy
and he's wearing like, into hockey
and
he's wearing jersey.
A hockey jersey
yeah, yeah.
And then that was a good distinction
between no, and they go that's finally actually, got it in and he's like yeah, just couldn't seem to get in the hole, and then pulls his shirt and then like punches him. And
that I'm is like, genuinely
aggressive, but perfect to show like he's not from this
are you,
world.
Are you trying to make the argument that Happy Gilmore is about class struggle? Is that
yeah? It's a no. it's a Marxist it's, text.
It's
like a Marxist text.
It's a Marxist text. Really.
It's like
at its core.
It's like you know we will tear down like the elite.
From their
pedestal by taking
stand,
the thing that
yeah.
matters most to them, which is their goddamn golden jacket.
Stupid golf game.
So, like, look, we joke about you know it being a Marxist text, but you're completely right, Riley. Like, it makes a really like it does make a really nice poignant, but very subtle, very understated.
Yeah, because it's not the point of the movie.
Because it's not the point of the
movie. Stupid goofy movie. But at one point, it's like golf is for rich snobby people, and they don't even realize it. And it's like, you're right, you've got him, but yeah. I mean, now back to you punching Bob Barker in the mouth.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know what the state of golf was in 1996.
I assume
it's really changing. Yeah. It's really changing. It's always been
quite high prestigious.
Even looking like Bag of Bands.
What I was going to say, do you think that would have encouraged people to go play more? I don't know what
no, but I know that it did increase the viewings for Price is Right among the youth demographic.
Oh, did it actually?
And they tried for years to do that, and then Bob Barker fighting Adam Sandler did one. It. That was yeah. it. They wasn't
that's
even there.
That's the MTV generation.
That's, yeah.
They were like, "Hey, he's cool. He does karate. Let's get him on." Because he does deceit. Like I think the line, "The price is wrong, bitch."
Yeah.
And then. But then Bob Barker grabs him by the throat. Like, and then his eyes open. And then his eyes open. And he just beats the shit out of him. And I was like, damn, that was phenomenally scary, but beautiful.
Oh, that was such a great scene.
But I mean,
Happy, even for all his shortcomings, is an incredibly likable character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are never not rooting for Happy Gilmore.
That's true. And I think it's more so because Shooter McGavin is such a dick.
Yes. The villain is such a good villain that your hero is not a very good hero, but you're like,
but yeah,
at least he's not the villain.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think the whole movie, he has good intentions.
Yeah, he loves his grandma.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That is the driving force behind that whole movie. He's like, I gotta save my house for my grandma.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that, I was like, oh.
You think that's lovely. Like, that's such a nice
sentiment. And it's like,
and
yeah, I'll go
even
with
Ben
this.
Stiller, uncredited in that movie, great character.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. That makes you hate him
so much
that you're like, go Happy.
But like, and he seems to be like a drug dealer selling quilts. He's like, how many. Look, I gotta do this deal right now. Do you want the quilts or not? And it's like, alright, good. You'll get your quilts. Well done, everybody. Arts and crafts extended by 4 hours. My fingers hurt.
You will go to sleep.
Or I will put you to sleep. Oh,
what
a classic.
I didn't even
know that was from this movie. I totally forgot, but I just know that line. It's like, you'll go to sleep. Or I will put you to sleep.
Is Ben Stiller...
Can you imagine someone... Do you reckon it would get away in this day and age? Like, if that was released in 2007...
Yeah, I know. If Adam Sandler released this now...
Mm. I think it would still do well.
Yeah,
because golf has not changed.
Yeah.
And so it still stands... I think that's what a big appeal for this movie is. Is that the golf... Golf is being shit on.
Yeah.
While it being an excellent golf movie.
Yeah.
is like, that's hard to do. You couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the only other one I can think about is Talladega Nights, and that's a good NASCAR movie.
Yeah.
While shitting on the NASCAR culture.
Yeah.
Of like, very few sports movies are able to take shots at the sport. But while they're successfully, well,
yeah. But doing like a very earnest and sort of,
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's
kind of a weird, nice portrayal.
I don't think it's taking shit. It's more like a critique,
yeah,
like a serious criticism.
Yeah,
although it's not anything golf can do to fix it. It's not like golf can't be like, well, we're gonna let
poor people
have no interest in golf. So it's like, all right.
I have jobs to go to, that's why.
Actually, just as a quick like side note as well, I remember reading up, so Spike Lee was, when he was talking about Bag of Ants,
yeah.
He was saying that he really dislikes the character of Bag of Ants because it's kind of, you know, set in the 1920s, the Depression's going on, and it makes no
reference
or like outlook onto the
fact that, you know, he was black community. And no one treated him so much worse.
Right? Yeah. And so, like, you know, obviously that shouldn't be a focal point of the movie of Bag of Ants because it's not about that. But, you know, how Happy Gilmore... Exactly. See, Happy Gilmore does mention in earnest and in an understated way.
I would have been a great golf player. Oh, is it because you're black?
Well, no. I'm not talking about, like, color in this sense for Happy Gilmore, but, you know, talking about, like, the sport of golf, right?
Yeah.
They mention, you know, that... There's that kind of critical outlook that, you know, golf is, when you were talking about the mixed, was it?
Economically diverse.
Yeah. See, that's actually a really poignant point. And that's something that Bag of Ants did not do.
Mm-hmm. At all.
And which is funny in my mind.
Oh, no, they did a little bit because they go, no one's going to come play golf because no one has money. And then she goes, some people have money. And those who have money, I want them to know that we exist.
Yeah.
And it's like, it very quickly touches on it.
But you know how, like...
And then the rest of the film is like, only rich people.
You know how, like... Exactly. And you know how, like, Bag of Ants, there's nothing ever noted about his skin color, which is important, especially in that time period.
If you're going to do a time piece...
Especially, yeah.
You're going to set it in a period of history and put all the stylings. You can't be like, and white people did nothing wrong in the 1920s.
Precisely.
Yeah. Congratulations, white people. We were lovely throughout time.
Yeah, had our lovely golf course. And, you know, white but lovely golf course.
I'm not saying that should be the focus, as I stated before, but it should be like, you know, as Happy Gilmore had done it, in reference to the kind of this almost snobbery in the golfing world, it should be kind of stated offhandedly.
And then even Happy makes reference to the fact that, like, when Carl Weathers is like, Chubbs is like, I would have been one of the greatest golf players, but I it never happened. It's like, oh, but they didn't let you play because you're black, which is still an actual rule in some
that
golf
is true.
Courses.
Seriously, it's
Tiger
not
Woods
nice.
Is not able to compete in some tournament.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, it's like,
it's regressive. Whew. It's. So, you know, these are like, although in Happy Gilmore they're delivered in a way which is funny.
Yeah, because then Carl Weathers goes, no, it's because I have a wooden hand. And then the second I saw that hand, and every time I saw that hand, I lost it. Because the arm is like a whole meter longer, all the fingers are protruding outwards, like pointing but separated, the thumb goes in a different direction, and then immediately it's crushed by a truck.
Well, see, and it's kind of like, I think it's like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, I think Adam Sandler has actually used comedy and humor in a really effective, critical way in some aspects.
I think definitely like the culture thing.
Yeah,
and that's
on the ninth hole at nine, and he's ready to be accepted. He's like, all right, I'm willing to give you guys a go and become part of you. And he goes to the ninth hole at nine, and all the sprinklers turn on, and he gets soaked.
Yeah,
and I think that point is like him, like, he's like, well, fuck these guys. Well, you know what? You're gonna do this. That's it.
Yeah.
See, and
I'm not even gonna pretend.
But the thing
anymore.
Is, as well, like, you know, the way that the guys who directed, what's the director's name again?
Dennis
Duggan. Duggan.
And I assume Adam Sandler would have had a heavy hand in production.
I feel like he probably would have.
I feel like the way that they've constructed these characters, especially like Shooter McGavin as dicks, and makes us want to root for Happy Gilmore is because of that kind of that classist difference.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, these guys are dicks because they're successful, because they don't understand.
Not all of them. There's the one.
That is true.
The one who's like, put the ball in the home. Yeah. The ball wants to go home. Yeah, yeah, its bags are packed. Take it to the airport.
But you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we hate Shooter McGavin because he's a dick to Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he doesn't feel like
Happy Gilmore should not be there.
Because Happy Gilmore,
he should not be here. He's
the outside.
He's crude. He's like
all he's not. Things. Shooter McGavin's
not. He's not in the spirit of golf. Where if anything, it obviously becomes that Shooter McGavin is not in the spirit of golf, and that anybody can play golf, and that's how it started.
And also, I want to bring up briefly what Matt previously mentioned. It got drowned out by the hullabaloo of all of us. You're saying, do you reckon that's intentional in terms of this kind of critical outlook onto the culture? And I would say yes.
Yeah, they're not amateurs. Like
No.
I think they would have planned this out. I don't think it's just coincidentally.
They're like, wow, this has a lot of deep messages that we had not intended.
Yeah.
It's just because it's a comedy, you wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't
yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would have done that, but no. It kind of did take it to quite a good level.
I thought they did it in a very accessible manner. That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, I dislike when heavily poignant things are like absolutely crammed down your throat.
Yeah. Subtlety.
This is subtle. Yeah.
Even though talking about it now, I'm like, I'm starting to really realize more and more of it. I'm like, they do talk about this. They do talk about that. They do. And like, but watching the movie, you're just like, oh, these guys are a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
And then, but you're like, oh, they're a bunch of dicks because of this and this and this.
Yeah.
And you didn't really realize.
What about the soundtrack, guys?
There were some bangers in there.
Adam Sandler, like, singing Kiss You All Over is like probably my favorite song.
Do you think they went through a stage of going through too many songs? Because I know some movies can suffer from that, where they play a lot of that. I think that's a trope of like
that era of film. I think like late 90s into like the 2000s, and you just have a soundtrack just full of like
it's just like songs. It's 15 but
seconds
clips.
Like they do it like Suicide Squad did it. They went through way too many songs because
it's like, oh, I get it. It's like, oh, we're gonna play Sympathy for the Devil,
and then we're gonna cut straight to Bohemian Rhapsody, and then we're gonna cut to Eminem.
Oh, we're gonna cut to this, and it's like it is so you're inundated by it. Something like comparatively, like Guardians of the Galaxy, which uses the music as both like a storytelling device and as like.
It's diegetic sound in those movies a lot of the time. And that's what was much
really
better.
Well done.
This was definitely of its era where you play 15 second clips of like music.
Yeah, as a montage. Lots of montaging and that sort of stuff.
I think on the montaging, definitely my favorite montage was the first golf tournament he enters and he beats the shit out of his caddy.
Yeah.
A bunch in the montage. because the caddy like picks up his clubs and then immediately he pushes the caddy to the ground and he's like, what the hell are you doing? And just starts beating the shit out of him. And he's like, I'm your caddy, sir. He's like, well, don't carry these are old. And then he's like, what should I do? I don't know.
Like, I think I'm just looking at the soundtrack now. Mm-hmm. Oh, they have Rock and Roll Part 2, which is probably the best song.
I think there was a montage one.
Yeah,
possibly. In it, and it was very, very good in that.
Actually, I'm surprised they don't have any Kiss in there because, like,
Gene Simmons' mask was in there.
That was putrid. That was dream sequence.
That was filthy.
But I don't know. I think it's
not heaps memorable. There's no points where I'm like.
I remember
the songs, but I do remember parts being like, oh, they've really gone through quite a lot of.
I remember when they played golf the second time. I remember the Rock and Roll Part 2. That's like I can remember that, and maybe like the opening song, like that's kind of the two things that
that's the only two that really
that are stuck in the memory. But like, yeah, like when it's got the montage with like the Rock and Roll Part 2, that's just firmly planted in my memory. It's like.
Yeah, all right.
Absolutely. Well, were there anything like any points that detracted you from, I guess, the overall experience? Like, I know I'm doing a lot of praising, but I still would only give this movie six and a half or a six
because I feel like there's something not there, and it's not in the structure, it's not in the story.
It's not in the comedy. All the jokes kind of land.
They all kind of land. It's lacking something. It's lacking like a big
what.
Like, I don't know.
Okay, so I hate to sound like an absolute tool, but like, do you feel like it's lacking sophistication to make a 10?
I think so. I think it's...
And I agree as well. I feel like for what it has done for its genre, it did it very well. But in terms of overall, like the canon of movies that exist, which there are so many, it's going to naturally shine.
Do you think it only fits with our generation?
No, I think my dad really likes The Waterboy as well.
Yeah.
My dad really enjoys these movies, and I don't know what it is.
That was something I was just thinking of, because it seems to be in our generation, especially, like, we don't always make Happy Gilmore references, but we know it a lot. We hear about it.
Yeah.
Like,
you know the scene.
First time watching it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you have obviously heard of Happy Gilmore.
You will go to sleep, or I will put you to sleep.
It's so in teenage culture that I was just...
You know why it resonates? I think it resonates with, like, a lot of us. It's one of those movies that had just got put on TV a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so I watched it a lot. Like, I watch it yearly on TV. You know what I mean? And I probably still do. I probably, if I see it on TV, I'll sit down and watch it. Or, like, I'll catch, like, the end of it or whatever. Because, it's one of those movies that's,
it
like,
is. It's very much a movie that's also about old people suck. And I think, like, and that's a...
Except for your grandma.
Yeah, except for your grandma, who is
who's essentially the sweetest person in the world.
Teenager because she put on the Gene Simmons mask. It was just weird, the whole movie, but, like, perfectly weird.
Yeah,
and it was like, but, like, old people, like all the golf people, they were like mid-40s. They're your parents' age in that movie, and they suck. They're the worst. Ugh, parents, and that's where this movie really sold it to.
Do you know what I feel like Happy Gilmore does successfully? I don't know what it is precisely. I can't pinpoint, like, what the magical element is, but even watching it for the first time last night, the feeling, like, the...
You are happy. You are happy watching the movie. No, it's true. A happy movie.
No, but
like,
it felt, while watching it, I hadn't even seen it, but it felt nostalgic. It felt like it brought me back to my childhood times.
It was
times
very much
like
of
the 90s.
Time.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was and a big
I feel like,
of the time movie.
I feel like there's something endearing about that. Like, it can transport you to that time. So that's why I feel like your dad might still enjoy it, Riley.
Go to your happy place. That's what... Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it brings me back to, like, my like the summer childhood of, like, 2000 for me or something. Yeah. You know, it's some bullshit like that. Because
you probably watch it on TV.
Yeah,
exactly.
I completely agree. That's how it works. It takes
something.
And Adam Sandler's movies of that era definitely do that for me. I can watch Big Daddy and just, like, I just have that feeling.
Yeah.
You know,
something that did detract from me was it was just product placement to the absolute brink.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, the Subway ad, which he's a star of, you're like, all right, I get it. Like, the world of golfing is filled with product selling, but then, like,
the Pepsi M.
That joke really missed me. Like, that was, they left a pause after it, I think, expecting people to laugh. And maybe in the cinema it did laugh, but for us it was just sort of like,
I was like, okay. Mm. And then, like, everyone's wearing top flight gear. All the cars, I think, were a certain make. And it was kind of just crammed with it. And only when I really started to notice it, I was like, oh man, this is, like, packed. Like, people were wearing T-shirts that had Subway on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one wears T-shirts that have Subway on it.
Yeah.
If you're in the crowd, you just bring a polo T-shirt.
Although,
or a shirt.
Can we, maybe I'm just putting too much on it. Can we look at this in a critical lens and say it is a Marxist text with all these product placements? You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like...
I mean, if you are talking about, like, there is a little montage where he's obviously just hawking off crap. And for something similar, there's a scene in Talladega Nights where Ricky Bobby is just like,
he sells the
if you don't chew Big Red, fuck you. Yeah. Like, which is one of my favourite lines in that movie.
And the best, like, one is he sold the windscreen space to advertisers, and he's driving the car trying to look under the Sprint.
So maybe it is that, and maybe, like, they...
Well, yeah,
it
is looking at
aware.
The nature of those sports, which are higher and late, and they're stuck. They're still stuck in the commercial low zone of you have to sell Pepsi, you have to sell Subway.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you're stuck in... what is considered a low culture thing when you're trying to be a high culture sport.
Exactly.
And he fits in. That's why he could sell Subway and everything. Yeah. Like,
from
a champion.
From an advertising perspective, I thought it was quite smart on Subway's behalf.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean,
oh,
like,
that's the best ad Subway's ever made inside of a movie. Yeah. Where he hits a sandwich into someone's mouth.
And it's this hole in one.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. They could have just got Tiger Woods to do that ad.
Yeah,
They should have been like, wait, keep that.
We're going to keep this.
Just superimposed Tiger Woods' face off, weirdly floats on top of it.
Yeah, I suppose I haven't really thought about it, but even thinking about, like, Big Daddy, that whole movie is just a big advertisement for Hooters. Now, I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
And that's, like, the first time I ever knew about Hooters. Mm-hmm. I remember, like when Hooters opened up in Penrith or Paramount.
Yeah,
Paramount,
something like that.
Paramount, right?
You were like, hey, Big Daddy.
Wait, hey, Big Daddy. And I'm like,
They have a Hooters?
And we went to Hooters because me and my brother were like, oh yeah,
Big Daddy. I saw Big Daddy. Good.
Do they have a Hooters in Parramatta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they?
Oh, do you want to go into a
Campbelltown? I do want to go.
Do you want lunch, lads?
Yeah. We'll do a what? The big, one in, we might one be able to watch Big Daddy and we'll shoot an episode from inside
Hooters. Hooters. Yeah.
I mean, we laugh at that idea, but
we'll go to Hooters. I don't know if they want to... Or Rouse Hill or something. I think it's Rouse Hill.
We'll eat ribs at the same time. It'll be perfect. There's
one in Campbelltown.
I love Hooters. I don't know if they've gone to shit since I've been there last. Probably. But my God, do I love Hooters. What a fucking restaurant. What a concept. I'm like, big titty ladies, hand me Hooters.
Hand me just big bits of meat. Let's get it on.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's pure. It's dirty capitalism. Dirty.
It's dirty. It is capitalism to women,
but
the
I love it. I'm like,
oh god.
It's a guilt-free zone because you're so guilty while you're in it. You're like, this is the worst of all mankind, but you can't feel it because you're like, it's Hooters.
But they got free refills. Back on track.
Oh yeah, see, I'm really against the objectivity, but they have free refills, so I gotta go.
This podcast is not sponsored by Hooters in any
it
way.
It will be.
Not yet.
It will be.
Forget Squarespace.
Yeah.
We're going for Hooters.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think this day and age, you can kind of just expect that movies, like, there's no, you know, advertisement for like Hooters or Subway in like
any movie I can think of really recently. I mean,
no, but there is like very subtle advertising. Mm-hmm. It's a bit annoying when you're watching like Skyfall and it's like, oh, I'm James Bond, I'm gonna have a Heineken, and he like
puts it in front of the screen. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Hey, you want but the you beer? It's like, do you have Corona? And there's like a keg of Corona.
I think there's a difference. Like, if you, I don't know what scene you're referencing directly, but like
that's in any Fast and Furious movie.
Any Fast and Furious
movie. Oh, if they're drinking Coronas out the back, like the end of the like whatever the two ones ago, I don't know what it was. But like at the end of that movie, they're all sitting around the house drinking Coronas.
That's a decent product placement
because you're like, oh yeah, these folks would drink Coronas.
Yeah.
But there's legit a scene where one of the bad guys, like Vin Diesel's like, you want a beer? And he's like, have you got Corona? And he's like, I've got a keg. And then it just zooms in on a keg of Corona. And it's just like, yeah, it's just like, that's not so like, that is, that's... you need more Happy Gilmore in your life.
Yeah.
Either go like really heavy handed.
Which they, like, I think they did. And they, like, the Subway ad is like, he's like, yeah, I could just... The lady said something about sponsorships, and then, like, you slowly see the cogs turn in Happy's head until it's like, oh, yeah, I could just be sponsored because I'm on the pro circuit now. And so he just starts selling his soul immediately because he has no intentions to ever be a pro golfer. So he's like, look, I'm just going to rise this.
That could also be a good... an efficient way of telling the story of professional athletes and sponsorship. Well,
that's why I was saying, you know, like on a
different
level.
This movie is much
level,
deeper than I really thought it was.
And kind of wanted it to be. Like, this is much deeper than I wanted it to be.
Damn you, Adam Sandler.
Like, no, you're right. Like the Subway ad in, the Subway sponsorship and ad in Happy Gilmore is actually relevant to both the sport, the story, and the character. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like...
Yeah. It's also probably Subway being like, hey, can we get some free...
Absolutely.
Like, Adam Sandler... Because they... You don't... You're not... I don't think you're really approached. I don't really know how it works. I wouldn't have to look at it.
I doubt Subway's like, hey, Subway's can we be in your movie? And you'd be like, no.
I think they would have gone to Subway.
I think Adam Sandler was probably in the writing room one day and like somebody brought Subway, like, some Subway.
Like, I reckon that gold card he pulls out of his pocket for free Subway for life, that was legitimate. He was like, yeah, you can be in my movie, but I have to get one of those cards that allows me to have Subway for the rest of
my life. I really like Subway. That's like what his like thing was. And then it's like, put him in the movie.
And this movie did really well. And he's like, I should make a bunch more of these.
But
he really made this
movie as well. When he comes back to when his missus is leaving, he has Subway in his hand there. He's got Subway home for dinner.
Oh, he does too.
Oh, that foreshadowing.
Yeah. Maybe the dude just really likes someone. Like, Adam Sandler just... he was like, you don't have to pay... Like, I'm not gonna... Like...
I don't want... Like, he didn't... He's actually never set out to make movies. He just makes movies so he can get, like...
Free
that's why
Subway.
He mentions the Colonel so often in every movie.
Yeah.
It's like, every time he does it, he gets, like, another 12 months of free KFC, and he's like... All right, time for a movie. My KFC sponsorship
is about to run out.
I'm sick of Subway.
But okay, so yeah, on a more serious note, aside from the product placement,
I don't know what it is in the movie. There's something that's stopping it from being a 10 out of 10, despite me only being able to praise it. There's something missing. Does anyone?
No,
I can't really. I like because I. like, critically, I think comedies are really hard to review critically.
Oh, I agree.
Yes,
you know what I mean? It's not even like Bag of Vance, which is like
just boring.
Where it's just boring, and it's like you can criticize it, you can pull that apart, and that sort of stuff. Adam Sandler movies, like what's the new one? Sandy Wexler.
Yeah.
Right, which looks god awful.
Yes.
Right, it's on Netflix. Yeah. I don't know why Netflix was like, oh, this will be profitable. Like,
oh, you did the Ridiculous Six and that got 0%? All right, time for your next one. Yeah. Keep it going.
Yeah. Maybe he mentioned Netflix and Sandy Wexler. Yeah.
They're like, all right, here's your 12 month free Netflix. And he's like, score!
Adam Sandler doesn't pay for anything.
That's why he's a millionaire, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, it's like you're just like, that's gonna be a bad movie, but it's like, it might have some funny jokes. Like, I've spoken to people like Ridiculous Six had some good jokes in it, and I'm like, all right, that's fine. Like, I can't really.
There's something
because it's never the age of
the goofball comedy. It's over, and that's why it's his type of humor and those kind of jokes. They passed. They passed at about like 2004. I would probably give the estimated.
2000s. So of that. Who's the modern equivalent of Adam Sandler? Who's like the big person Amy who's Schumer. Putting out people are getting sick of Amy Schumer. People are getting sick
really
of
quick
movies.
I can't think of
Melissa
like,
McCarthy plays the same character in all her comedies
but she's not writing them, I don't think.
The powerhouse, like,
I can't think of anyone who's powerhousing through making like movies and just because he like he just dominated for ages. He just made a movie
that's
a
true
year,
yeah
so
he dominated
a very
for
long
a
time
very
I'm pretty sure
time.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even like he's I'm just trying to think. Fuck.
Like, I can't think of anybody in modern times who, if you have any idea, tweet us or something. I don't know. We don't have an account.
We'll make an account.
Post one on Twitter. We'll come find it. Yeah.
But no, I know what you mean, because it's kind of like, I remember when Riley and I were talking about, when a few of us actually were talking about this idea for this podcast to make things. One of the things we were talking about was kind of like, what movies should we look at? And we had this apprehension towards like stoner comedies or like, you know, screwball.
Because they're hard to pick.
Because they're hard to critically look at, because we know we're not going to give them a 10 because there's something that's missing, because I think largely because we're past that time now. It's not 100% relevant.
But even
to the time
think
that
in the
in.
Time, you, like, but even 1996, in the time, exactly, you have great films coming out.
Yeah.
You, like, what came out in 96?
Schindler's List come out in 96?
Yeah, like you have.
I don't think you can compare Happy Gilmore
to
Schindler's List.
No, same year. Like,
Seven, Usual Suspects, they're all kind of in that year.
Yeah, and movies that have like really good comedic elements use like comedic elements really well. I don't know. I mean,
there's something about it that just kind of makes it not viable. I think it's because the goofball comedy that's throughout the whole movie. It's not clever comedy, so it kind of you can laugh at it, but you won't like carry that for a long time.
It doesn't make you think. Like, we're thinking about it,
because we have to.
And when we're thinking about it, we're like, right. Oh shit, this movie's actually got something to it.
No, you're true.
If we didn't do this, I could watch that movie and never think about that movie again for the rest of the week.
Absolutely, that's
apart
true.
From you'll go to bed. I'll put you to sleep.
You go to sleep.
Or I'll put you to sleep. Like, I'll think about that every now and then. And I'll be like, that was funny as shit.
But Matt, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Can I just quickly, can we talk about the cameo of the guy who plays Jaws in James Bond?
Yeah.
In this movie and his role in this movie, which was phenomenal.
It's a two-bit joke. It's like, he was the boss and Adam Sandler shoots him in the head with the nail gun. And then he shows up at the end and he's like,
as a massive fan,
I'm going to help you.
He's like, I'm really happy with what you've done with your life because you were shit at construction work. Also, that montage where he's at every job and at every job he puts whatever it is between his legs and pretends it's his penis.
And then that continues on when he's going in the golf. When he gets his riding around with the golf clubs.
It's like, it's so stupid, but it sets the tone of like what his kind of character is. Which, he's a teenage boy, because if you're a teenage boy, you don't get everything and put it between your legs and pretend it's your penis.
You're not being a teenager.
You're not being a teenager. You've let yourself down. That's the funniest thing on earth when you're like 16.
Do you think, just like, because it does make me sad when I look at like Ridiculous Six and I'm like, my God, this man like is a funny guy. Yeah. And obviously he has some smarts about him. He does know how to write like a cohesive story that's like...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're looking at Happy Gilmore, right? That's a shining example.
You know, like a lot of people shit on Adam Sandler.
Yeah, because he kind of came out and the movies, they were all the same. And you kind of like, I've seen this movie.
Yeah.
And so at this time, you hadn't seen this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then kind of Billy Madison came out. You're like, it's different. Yeah. I haven't seen this movie. And eventually it gets to a point where you're like,
yeah,
100% I've seen all these movies.
Whereas like somebody else who was in that movie,
mm-hmm.
Ben Stiller, who's gone on to do some really good movies. You know yeah. what I mean? And it's like, and different genres of films. Like he was very successful with like Madagascar, the Meet the Parents movies, Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That was like all reasonably good films. You know what I mean? Yeah. That don't.
He didn't write Secret Life.
No. But like he's still...
Maybe that's Adam Sandler's issue. We were saying how one of his best movies was something he didn't write. Was
Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah. Punch Drunk Love.
But that's his, I think, highest... Oh, not a documentary. Highest rated one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he didn't write it and he plays a very...
It's a more dramatic kind of role. Kind of, it's still comedic.
A very good movie by him that's not the same is Funny People. Yeah, which I really enjoy. It doesn't get great ratings, but I thought it was a very
good
movie. What's that other movie, Grown Ups? No. But did he make that?
I don't think he made Grown Ups.
No.
Oh, he
did he?
Might have.
See, look, it's in that vein. See,
it's in that vein, but that's a David Spade, Kevin James. Oh. Yeah. Kevin James was not in this Adam Sandler movie, which was heartbreaking.
But Rob Schneider was.
Is he?
Yeah.
Who's
he's
he?
He's the You Can Do It guy.
He's not in this movie.
I thought he was.
He doesn't yell You Can Do It in this one. Unfortunately.
I thought he was.
That's in The Waterboy.
Yeah.
It's not this one.
He's not in it, no.
Although the other great character is the guy who yells, you can't make this shot, you jackass. Who follows him around for ages.
Yeah, jackass.
But yeah, it's kind of like, does Adam Sandler get a second wind? Or is he doomed to just be doing Netflix?
If he goes for like a serious bit of drama and then comes back.
Yeah.
And just... Or just hides for ages and just makes something.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's got to realize now he's not writing in 1996 anymore.
Yes, that's what I think. I think he's stuck in that time loop. Yeah. But see, that's why he can still afford to make movies these days, because there are quite a large
and loyal... Because we watch this movie and he gets money when we watch this movie.
No, but there's also...
And I'll watch this movie again if you were like... If next week you were like, hey, we should watch Billy Madison again, or we should watch Happy Gilmore, I'd be like, yeah, let's put it on.
But you know, like Sandy Wexler, for example, right? The new movie that's coming out on Netflix.
I have zero motivation to watch that.
But Adam Sandler still has quite a large and loyal fan base who are still willing to watch his movies because he's stuck in the 1996 way of writing.
And so are they.
And that's...
The same people who still watch The Simpsons, I imagine.
Yeah, but and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's you, you
that's
know,
your taste.
Enjoy
I'm glad
it.
Being catered to
because
at least it's being catered to by one man who has a buttload of money now.
But like Sandy Wexler in the world of like what's something comparable, but like
Get Out.
No, yeah, Get Out. No, but like if he wanted to do like a semi-serious, like almost in the vein of like Wolf of Wall Street,
he probably could.
Story about like a Hollywood producer.
Oh, you mean like Trumbo?
Trumbo's about a blacklisted writer.
Not quite that serious. Like Wolf of Wall Street, in the like the same way that Jonah Hill can be in Moneyball and Superbad. You know what I mean? It's like the versatility. I think he can do it. I really want to see him do that. And I think
Funny People is really good because that whole movie is actually like crippling depression. The whole movie. That's what that movie's about. Is that you're funny on the outside because on the inside you're broken.
Yeah.
And so all you can do is be like, haha, and hope that no one fucking notices that you're crying on the inside.
I agree with you, Brad, in that I hope he does
come back because
he's a talent. You know what I mean? Like Punch Drunk Love, for example.
Funny People was, I think, got critically kind of shafted. I haven't seen it for a while.
It's like,
I probably should watch it again, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to see is actors or actresses or performers who are kind of shoehorned into a specific vein who break out of that vein. So like we can look at Tom Hanks, for example. He used to be primarily a comedic actor, but is now a drama powerhouse.
The big one is Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis was just comedy, and they were like,
you know what you should do though? Die Hard. And after that goddamn movie,
Bryan Cranston,
Robin Williams,
Matthew Broderick,
Matt Broderick, Jim Carrey,
Mike Keaton is one of my favorite actors for that at the moment. Like, he's such like a transformational actor. I just want like you go from like Mrs. Mum, to Batman, then like you're in
Shame period.
Yeah, you're not really in anything at all, and then you come out and you're like Birdman.
Prometheus.
Yeah.
No, not Michael Fassbender, Michael
Keaton. No, sorry, my bad. I was like,
two very different people.
But you have, yeah, you have Michael Keaton, and he's like back. He's like, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, he's in power now. Oh, also, yeah. Fassbender is in power.
Also Fassbender. Well, Fassbender's great, though.
Fassbender's like pretty consistent.
He's consistent. He's consistent. But like, because we watched Covenant, and then he's in Shane, which I've been saved on something.
Yeah.
I've been looking at a whole bunch of his movies for no particular reason.
Yeah.
But this is neither here nor there.
You should watch Fish Tank. But if you want a good movie with Fassbender, watch Fish Tank.
Yeah. That's a recommendation for everybody, yeah, also. Yeah.
But look, okay. The fact that we're rambling on about Keaton and Fassbender.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Please come back.
Needs the resurrection.
Yeah, he does. He needs a really good writer, really good contemporary comedy writer.
Absolutely.
To work with him. Like, and he, you know, kind of like.
You had to pick a comedian.
And you know what?
In this day and age to write for him.
Jordan Peele,
amazing, yeah. Amazing work. When we get
one film smashes out, of the
and
park.
Also I feel like start small too. Like I don't know if you guys had heard.
Donald Glover would also be an excellent choice.
That's true, yeah. But old mate Nicolas Cage did a small indie film last year, I think, called, I can't remember what it was called, but they were saying the whole movie, the whole performance, like, rests on Cage's performance, and yeah. He blew it out of the park. Like, he was amazing in it. So, well, you know,
I couldn't take him seriously after. Well, exactly. I want to take his face.
Oh.
But see, that's my point, right? That's why I'm saying, you know, maybe the way to go is start small.
Yeah.
Rebrand yourself.
Well, like Jim Carrey, his career was basically dead in like 2001, yeah. 2002. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You're coming off the back of like the shit Batman movie. Like,
just, Dumb and Dumber.
Just, yeah, you're not having.
Dumb and Dumber 1's alright. It stays in the same park as this. It's a good
thing. Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? Like,
the people who love it. Love it.
Exactly. But then he, you know, he was kind of getting into the stagnation period, which is similar to Adam Sandler.
Well,
but then he broke out with
Eternal Sunshine, which is an
amazing movie. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
well, Charlie Kaufman. Yeah. What do you think?
And Gondry. Can't get anything out of amazing, there. Amazing DOP. But yeah, I feel like...
I don't know what makes this movie for me. Like, final ratings, Brad?
I'm going to give it a 6.
You're going to give it... Really?
Yeah.
All right.
6.5.
Yeah. You know, I enjoyed it for what it was worth. Knowing that, I give it a 7.
7?
Yeah, because I enjoyed... Well, because it makes no amends for what it is.
No, yeah, that's true. I'd probably be close to give it to 6.5 or 7.
Yeah, yeah.
Myself, because I really enjoyed it, but I was like, I don't... There's not anything in this movie that makes me go, this is a great film.
Yeah, it's funny and you laugh at it.
I think the bit is that I'm not ever emotionally moved. I really think about it. That's, I think, important to me in a movie, is that I'm emotionally moved. But there's no bit in the movie where I'm like... Yes, go Sandler. Like, the end bit is him doing like a mad trick shot,
yeah.
Because he learned how to play putt-putt. And like, even when Carl Weathers dies, I'm not moved. Like, there's no bit where I'm like, this has any emotional depth.
But and the thing is, though, it doesn't make it a bad movie. It doesn't try to make you do that either.
Like, even like Carl Weathers' death, it's set up as a joke, and his death is the punchline, and then it cuts, like, you know, like, it does that comedy thing of just cutting straight to
And like, that's the thing, you can have great comedies that have emotional moments in it, and I think that's what makes great comedies. Is that there's bits where you're like, that shattering or whatever. There's, you know, there's still set in the real world. But this movie, like Sandler's movies in general, kind of like those kind of big moments, I feel.
Yeah.
Brad?
I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think back on it. But like, you know, like there's no, Misery loves comedy and that sort of stuff. So it's like, there's no truly devastating moment in Adam Sandler, in Happy Gilmore.
It's all kind of hope the whole way through.
Yeah, and that's why it's like a true... Like, you feel shit, watch this movie, because you'll laugh and you'll feel good about it.
Because you're like, he did it, and he shouldn't have done it, but he did it, and
It's a mood lifter, and that's why I think it is above average. Like, I think why the 6s and the 7s, and even maybe like an 8, is where that movie kind of belongs. I think, like, it's a very solid comedy that will probably be remembered by a lot of people. I don't think that anyone's going to forget Happy Gilmore anytime soon compared to some other films that are probably on the list.
It's just that it's just not going to hold...
I'm not going to remember Bag of Ants.
No. But in 6 months from now, I probably can't tell you anything.
You know,
about
I value like Bag of Ants as much as I value a movie like Fried Green Tomatoes. I think it's just like one of those movies that just exists, and it's not like in my filmic memory. I couldn't tell you about anything that happens in the story. It's just going to be one of those things. Happy Gilmore, totally different.
Yeah, and maybe that's due to the time, but that'll probably wrap it up for this one. I'm Riley.
I'm still Keaton.
I'm Matt.
And I am Brad.
All right, thank you for listening.